Oh, because I haven't seen it.
Meeting will come to order.
Oh, okay.
This is the meeting of the Planning Committee. And
number is the hearing. Is that number one?
Yes.
Is that the first item? All right, this hearing will now come to order. This hearing concerns the 2010 conformance determination of the 88 cities in the County of Los Angeles with the Los Angeles County Congestion Management Program. The Secretary's office will now provide comments concerning the publication of a public hearing notice for this item. All right, it was published in the Los Angeles Daily News and on the Internet. Executive Officer of Long Range Planning, Brad McAllister, will provide further comments concerning this agenda item.
Thank you. The Congestion Management Program is intended to address the impacts of local growth on the regional transportation system. Our goal is to comply with the statutory requirements of the CMP. MTA, along with the 88 cities in the County of Los Angeles, have responsibilities that include monitoring level of service on the CMP highway network, monitoring the CMP transit network, implementing the TDM and land use analysis programs, and participating in the countywide deficiency plan. As the Congestion Management Agency for Los Angeles County, MTA is required to monitor the CMP and make local CMP conformance findings. A positive conformance finding ensures the continued flow of an estimated $95 million in gas tax revenue to the 88 cities in the County of Los Angeles. Our review has found all cities in the county to be in conformance with the CMP requirements. Therefore, we recommend that the Board of Directors find that 88 cities in the County of Los Angeles are in conformance with the CMP for Los Angeles County. And this concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you. Now we are open for public comment. If you are here to make a presentation regarding this item, please come forward and state your name for the record. Comments will be limited to 1 minute. John Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. Last year, 1,018,000 successful requests. First of all, throughout the county, throughout the state, 3 minutes is what you are usually customarily given. That's what the courts recognize. Only here in Los Angeles are you given 60 seconds. Extensive cuts in bus service in Santa Monica, Los Angeles, and Culver City render those cities out of congestion for the management program. Your agenda is false. Your agenda says remarks by Martha Wellborn. Because she has not appeared, this cannot be accepted by Sacramento. We are asking for a new public hearing that adheres to the public agenda. I know that you don't give a damn about the rules until the LA Times does a story the way they did on the Inspector General, which I harassed them for and cursed at them for 3 years until I did the story yesterday. I'm telling you right now, and I want to see Martha Wellborn here because she's responsible for Angel's Flight for the death of two people on the system.
Okay, thank you. Public, anybody else want to be heard on this? Not the public hearing. Did you want to be heard on this? Okay. I don't have a card for you, so come on up. Don't worry about it.
Number two, right?
Pardon?
Is this for number two or number...
This is for the public hearing on...
Item number two on the
item
agenda.
Number two.
Okay. Basically... Yeah, sorry. Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno, Northeast L.A. The agenda item also includes the congestion mitigation fee feasibility study, references to that. However, if all 88 cities are in compliance, what's the relevance of having the congestion mitigation fee feasibility study or provide its status? Now, one of the elements of the fee, the congestion mitigation fee is. Is it a fee or is it going to be a tax under Prop 26? Thank you.
Thank you. That closes the public hearing. Is there any discussion? Part of the
off staff's recommendation.
Okay, Director Du Bois moves.
Second.
Second by Pisana. Without objection, unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 3.
Good afternoon. I'm Renee Berlin. I'm one of the executive officers in countywide planning. Today we're asking for your approval to screen the freight track alternative from further consideration in the draft environmental document for the South Bay Metro Green Line. This alternative was moved forward in the into the draft document as it was envisioned to be a relatively simple, fast, and less expensive alternative to implement light rail-like service in the South Bay corridor. Our analysis to date has showed that this alternative would not yield the quick-to-implement, cost-effective performance originally anticipated. We have consulted with FTA, and they concur with our recommendation, and we are now asking for your approval to screen this alternative. We would also like to provide you with an update on our outreach efforts to date, and Randy Lamb, our project manager, is here to provide you with a brief overview.
Okay, we started the draft environmental process in January of last year. We are now at about the halfway point. In addition to our no-build and transportation system management alternatives, we are looking at two-build alternatives. The light rail alternative, which continues the green line from where it ends at Marine Avenue and continues south to Torrance with four stations, and allows via the Crenshaw-LAX transit corridor direct service up to Century Aviation for a connection to the central terminal area of LAX via the LAWA Plan People Mover, and further north to the Expo Light Rail to connect to Santa Monica or downtown LA. We can also connect a ride on the Green Line to Norwalk or transfer to the Blue Line to downtown. Our other alternative is the freight track alternative that would operate passenger vehicles on the existing freight track, and that would run from Century Aviation down to Torrance. We are looking at eliminating the freight track alternative from further analysis due to low performance and reduced and no advantages in terms of cost, impacts, or benefits as compared to the light rail or TSM alternatives, and therefore we are recommending that it be eliminated from further analysis. Our outreach effort includes last October we had a series of four community meetings. They were well attended. We heard generally support for the light rail alternative, and we also heard concerns from residents along the right-of-way, continued concerns about noise, vibration, traffic impact, safety, property values. We also held a tour for elected officials along the alignment from Marine Avenue to the South Bay Galleria last Monday to allow a shared view of the right-of-way and the alignment. We are continuing our environmental work. We will continue with our public outreach. We're looking at having a tour of a similar facility of the Pasadena Gold Line coming up, and we expect to finish up our draft environmental process at the end of this year or early 2012. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you. We have a public comment first. I'll take it. Mr. Walsh?
The chair needn't use the honorific Mr. The chair has known Mr. Yaroslavsky for about a quarter of a century. First of all, this is don't build planocracy. Tens, hundreds of millions. I never hear you scaling down planning. You cut operations. Racist. racist cuts of operation, and you plan things that never get built. Who remembers the Burbank Glendale light rail? Remember that? Who remembers the monorail in the valley? Who remembers the light rail in the valley? Who remembers the, and incidentally, I've now talked about over $100 million of planning. And it's okay. I understand. You are proud racists. Because the only thing you despise are the blacks and the Hispanics and the Asians who actually take your bus system. For shame.
Speaking as a white man.
Thank you. Mr. Fasano.
Yes, just a couple questions. I think I understand the recommendation, but I wanted some more familiarity with this particular freight corridor. Is this a corridor we own, number one? And number two, I presume, are there still freight rights with it that are being used? And then I have a follow-up.
Yes, this is the Harbor Subdivision right-of-way. It currently is an active freight service with 2 to 4 trains a day between the ports and El Segundo, LAX area. We acquired it as a result of the Alameda Corridor in the early 90s.
It was part of the rail purchase agreement for our Metro Rail system.
So we own it, but there are freight rights. Is that BNSF?
Correct.
And since there are still operations on it, and we presume those will be maintained for some time to come, the 2 to 4, whatever, indefinitely?
Yes, yes.
We've been having discussions, we're initiating discussions with BNSF about the future of the rail line in certain areas of the corridor. There's more activity than in other areas of the corridor. Based on the Alameda Corridor operating agreement, they're not allowed to run through trains through there anymore. So they're really serving the refinery areas in El Segundo. North of El Segundo by the airport, they're using it for storage, and then there's maybe 1 or 2 trains per day in the going through the ports.
So at some point, we own this, they operate a few trains. At some point, some of it may be suitable for abandonment and part of it would continue to be used?
We're going to be having discussions with BNSF similar to the discussions that were held with the Gold Line.
Okay. I was just kind of curious, based on this recommendation, what the ultimate outcome would be of the corridor. I'll move the recommendation.
Second.
Discussion without objection. Unanimous vote. We have one other item. Is that item number one? Okay, I'm conflicted on that, so I'll turn it over to Director Du Bois to, you have 3. Here.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is an item to establish a bench for 2 disciplines, one for economic advisors and the other for urban planners and architects. It's largely administrative. We often have projects that come up that are unplanned and have to hire outside experts, including economists in the main, to take care of them, and the procurement process to do that is sometimes quite lengthy. Establishing a bench will allow us to foreshorten that process and get those needed outside experts on a quick basis. There is no money asked for. It's part of our current budget for this year. It's a 5-year contract, but will be budgeted in succeeding years as they go. It was a very large procurement. Over 137 people picked up material. There were 34 applicants, and we've narrowed the field to 27, which is quite large, which includes a number of minority firms and disadvantaged firms. We think we have a very good group, and we'd like to have your authority to move forward with this.
Other comments?
Well, I have one brief one. Do we receive feedback from other agencies within the county in terms of their experiences with these firms, whether they've been positive or whether they've had issues in certain cases?
We do, in fact. In this case, either we have worked with these firms before or we did a fairly extensive background check on all of them to check with those that they listed as references and also with other public agencies. So they have been vetted, yes.
I'll move approval of the recommendation.
Quick question. I'll second it, but I have a quick question also, though. Roger, is this bench different than the bench, for instance, that finance has on terms of bonding and stuff? I mean, Is there any are there overlaps there, or
there's probably very little overlap. It would mainly be in the economists from that firm, but probably a different economist. Okay. Ours tend to specialize in land use issues and those kinds of business issues that come up, rather than pure bonding.
So this is okay. So this is a bench sort of devoted to the stuff you work on, the public-private partnerships, the joint development stuff, et cetera.
Exactly, and things that come up like Union Station or billboards, those kinds of things where the valuation is very important.
Got it. All right, thank you. I'll second it.
Okay, thank you. I do have just a quick question. The bench hasn't been renewed in 10 years. Does that mean we haven't had a bench in 10 years? And
They had a bench that ran out of planning until I believe it ran through 2007, so we haven't had one actually for 2 years. We've had some of that which spilled over a bit, and we've been working on this for about a year to get it established. So we really had a gap there where we didn't have a bench.
And when we have a bench, and not just this one, but generally, help me out, do we regularly review the folks on the bench, or do we put them in place until somebody screams and then change them?
Well, we have a finite time limit. This is a 3-year bench with 2 extensions. During the course of that, we work with them regularly, but we also take a look each time we send out a task order, because they're not hired except for specific tasks. And we do a quick check at that time, of course, as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have no other questions.
Sure.
And if there are no objections, recommendations accepted.
Okay. Item 4.
Directors, Chairman Alex Clifford, Executive Officer High Speed Rail, here to present you your update, your monthly update on regional rail matters. Starting off with High Speed Rail Authority, it's been quite active in the last couple of months, and in November and December, the authority voted to program their ARRA money and their high-speed intercity passenger rail money that they were allocated from the FRA to the Central Valley. At that time, that was going to be a segment running just slightly north of Fresno to just slightly north of Bakersfield. And then in December, the states of Wisconsin and Ohio said thank you but no thank you to their allocation of ARRA money. They turned it back in. The FRA redirected their money, and we received, our state received another $616 million. The authority then took action to place that on the Central Valley also, in order to try to complete up to 120 miles of track work that would basically connect Fresno and Bakersfield. The authority is also working with the FRA on concepts of sort of advanced improvement projects, and you can see here in the last bullet they're looking at trying to use some existing money and future money across the entire state to address projects for high-speed rail while they're doing the Central Valley Corridor. No doubt more to happen on that front in the coming months. High-speed timeline-wise, this is just a slide I show you every month. Forget about it. It's got to be updated. I just continue the program, this slide, until the authority updates it. On the Losan front, we've provided you here some details about the Pacific Surfliner. We also had our first strategic workshop with Gene Skoropowski in December. Director Diane DuBois participated in that. Thank you for that. And that was the first of what will be several workshops as we develop a new strategic plan for that corridor. Also added to this slide, and I'll get you out a revision of this PowerPoint, some information that just came in this morning about the implementation of the express train that Caltrans has been talking about. They wanted to convert a existing intercity train originating out of San Diego and terminating here in Union Station to an express train. You can see that they're going to have a kickoff event on February 15th at 6:30 in the morning at the Santa Fe Depot in San Diego. CTC Commissioner Chalker is expected to be the keynote speaker. That train will start obviously in San Diego, stop at Solana Beach, Oceanside, Irvine, Anaheim, and terminate here at Los Angeles. It'll start at 7:05 on Monday through Fridays, arriving here at 9:33 in the morning. It'll save about 17 minutes. And I show you here how significant that is, because the existing travel time is about 2 hours and 45 minutes, San Diego to Union Station. On the Metrolink update, the Metrolink board received a report from their outside consultant, Macias, on various project management practices within the organization. The consultant has concluded that they need to catch up. They have not continued to develop controls over their projects as they've grown both in scope and budget. CEO John Fenton has concurred with those findings and has moved very rapidly to bring on board a consultant that's very expert in the area of metrics and capital projects. He's moved quickly to institute the necessary checks and balances there and to begin aligning the organization with the core business values. So we think that's a good move, and I believe one more slide just showing you the reorganization that just took place at Metrolink. John Fenton had Deputy CEO Avery Grimes with him on an interim basis. He is soon to leave, and so John has announced his new reorganization. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
John.
So my understanding is March 3rd, the High Speed Rail Authority is meeting here. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And Metro is, I presume, kind of keeping an eye. Certainly they've been available at the San Gabriel Valley meetings that have been held, but I'm hoping for the sake of that project they're going better than some of them are out my way with the reaction and concerns that are out there in terms of the sharing of some of these corridors. And at some point, is there an issue in terms of Metro maybe having to add some input into here, offering some suggestions?
Director, I've invited director of the High Speed Rail Authority to make a presentation to the board, this board, in February. And I've communicated to him that although we're very excited and supportive of the project, that it's essential that a plan with a schedule be devised for bringing the project into Los Angeles and points south. Bakersfield to Madera is really exciting, but we need to get it into Los Angeles. He understands that need. I understand he'll be also speaking at SCAG, the SCAG board, and OCTA, and I suspect that he's going to get a very strong, consistent set of messages that this project has to link the biggest city in the state to the project.
Again, what I'm hearing at this point, I think we're trying to keep pathways out of Los Angeles open, somehow connecting to the Inland Empire. But there are some extreme concerns right now along the 10 and along the 60. I know there's a few cities that are kind of interested in maybe looking at getting high-speed rail stations there, but I'm not even sure that they fully internalize what the impacts. The impacts on these things are huge in terms of the straightness. And with the curvature in some of the freeways, you have to come off the right-of-way sometimes. It just creates massive impacts. So I'm kind of wondering at the same time, knowing that my sense is that the segment connecting Los Angeles to San Diego is kind of perhaps third in line to either the segment to Orange County or the segment to Palmdale. But I'm wondering at this point, and there may be some interest. Maybe at some point they figure out how to make it work for San Gabriel Valley. But has there been any thought at all about connecting from Anaheim to Riverside and maybe making that the Inland Empire touch point and just making it one line so you have only one connection coming out of Union Station? And there may be all sorts of problems with Director Du Bois's cities. I mean, they've got issues as well. But I'm just kind of wondering whether, rather than coming out of Union Station twice with two separate corridors, is that another consideration?
I think that what I would suggest about the Anaheim to LA corridor is that certainly, if San Diego is included, even more so, we need to try to keep pushing for integrated planning between Metrolink, Amtrak, and the high-speed rail. Similarly, on the San Gabriel Valley corridor, we have Metrolink, we have potential East LA line, the Foothill line. How these all fit together, I don't think has been figured out yet. That's Martha Wellborn and I have discussed this, having MTA initiate some work to figure out how to make a rational whole out of it. I think that remains a work in progress as we speak.
Thank you.
Diane.
And
connection with that, and I think I mentioned this to you at one point in time, could we make some kind of an overlay that shows where all this stuff is? I'm talking about the light rail, as well as high speed, as well as anything that's on rail.
Sure.
So we learn that maybe there are some unintended consequences that we may not see until we put it all together?
We'll do that.
Thank you.
Dr. Clyde Williams?
Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno, Northeast LA. We also are quite concerned regarding the San Diego line. We've asked for meetings to be held in the city of Los Angeles and East LA. However, we've been told, oh, the staff's too occupied. So San Gabriel Valley got several workshops, but little was said about how to get from the 710 into Union Station. The alternatives, based upon at least the reactions of three neighborhood councils in eastern LA, is no way. Take it by the 60. But we've been told that because they're preparing for the March presentation for the San Diego line, oh, they can't do anything for the community. But they say, oh, we've talked to the city of Los Angeles. The neighborhood councils are part of the city of Los Angeles, but we have not been given any workshops, any presentations, and we've only seen what's happened in the San Gabriel Valley. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Is it a note and file item?
Yes.
Without objection, be noted and filed. Last item five, director's report.
Thank you, Chair. Last Wednesday, we had a press event in which we retired the last diesel bus from the MTA fleet. The chair, Mr. Canavi, was there. Mayor Villaraigosa, Supervisor Antonovich, Director O'Connor, and officials from the AQMD. I should note that the thousands of buses we have purchased, the CNG buses, were done with massive amounts of federal support. As you know, for decades, they've helped us buy the clean CNG buses. As a consequence, we think we're the first in the world, the first major transit system in the world to run entirely on CNG. Next week at the board meeting, we'll be talking about the rail car purchase. We've been discussing for some time the goal of achieving a local plant or some kind of local preference. And until yesterday, had received no input from the feds, from the FTA. I had a long conversation yesterday with Peter Rogoff, the FTA director, administrator, actually, and we'll have a follow-up conversation today with their general counsel. I'm hopeful that by the time of the board meeting that we'll have some clear ideas to what the FTA view of this procurement might be. So with that, I'll conclude the report. Thank you.
Just a question. I think everybody is pleased that we've moved to a full CNG fleet. I guess one of the things, I think this may have happened in Ventura County or one of the other counties, when you actually had a loss of gas service, a natural gas service, you know, unlike diesel stored in tanks, what do we do if there's an event, an earthquake or whatever, that shuts down some of our facilities? Do we have type of plans to really recognize that in some respects we may be a little bit more vulnerable to losing the capacity to put our fleet out there?
I don't know right offhand, Mr. Chair and Director. We will. Why don't we put that on the list and we'll come back and respond. Part of that plan would be, what's the gas company's recovery plan? What local reserves do they have that they would access in the event of such an event? We don't. I know that we only have a day or two of storage, maybe 3 days of storage at each division.
Okay.
So I think this would merit a closer look-see, and we'll bring it back maybe to the operations committee.
That'd be fine.
John Walsh.
I'm asking for county council rule on the validity of the public hearing. The county council wasn't here. You didn't call, Mr. Yaroslavsky didn't call the roll. We don't even know who was here. It's not on the record. It's not on the tape. And my favorite is, you say, disregard the official current timeline. The official current timeline for a high bullet train is Union Station to Palmdale, December 2011, 10 and a half, 11 months from now. 11 months from now. It is absolute insanity. And you know, long last, you know I went to the FBI on the expo line. You know that, Zev. And you know you are under federal investigation because I screamed and cursed at Shelby Grad at the Times and told him to put that damn story in the paper. You're the expo line and the story. And now you're going to blame it on Mark Ridley Thomas. Blame it on the black man. You're the one who's under FBI investigation on the expo line. And read it in the Times. And I am a Jew, although my name is Walsh. Why don't you come up and do your public
comment? We'll vote and file item number five without objection. Your public comment, Dr. Clyde Williams.
Eh, forget it.
Mr. Walsh, do you want another minute?
I said my piece.
First, this month's report will be presented by Assistant Treasurers Donna Mills and Mike Smith.
Good afternoon. Economic data indicated an improving economy as 2010 came to a close. Holiday spending and increased manufacturing activity drove economic expansion in November and December in most Federal Reserve districts. But the rate of improvement remains disappointing, and the slow growth outlook has not changed, as evidenced by the Fed's continued commitment to its $600 billion Treasury repurchase program and the cautious stance of business with respect to hiring. Unemployment remains a major headwind for the economy. As shown on this slide, the U.S. unemployment rate fell to 9.4% in December. While a move in the right direction, the consensus is unemployment will remain above 9% throughout 2011, as the modest hiring recorded in the last several months is far short of levels needed to lower unemployment significantly. The labor market in California remains on life support, attributed to weak job growth in the first phase of the recovery. Job creation in the administrative, support services, and technical areas has not been enough to offset losses in construction, financial activity, and government. Forecasts predict California's unemployment rate will remain above 12% through the first half of 2011 and will not dip below 10% before the end of 2012. The Consumer Confidence Index generally remained unchanged in December. The trend sideways is not surprising given continued high unemployment and weak housing markets across a majority of regions. Inflation increased slightly in December, but at 1.5% year over year remains low at the consumer level. Outside of energy costs, there is little sign of widespread inflation, giving the Fed leeway to implement its buying program to help stimulate the economy. Currently, Fed fund futures don't signal a tightening until 2012. This slide shows the U.S. Treasury yield curve as of December 2009, September 2010, and December 2010. In December 2010, yields moved higher along the 2 to 30-year part of the curve, in spite of the Fed's latest round of Treasury purchases. This seemingly opposite effect of the program may be attributed to several factors, including bond investors' concern about U.S. debt growth and unease that the purchases alongside improving macroeconomic data will ultimately stoke inflation and push longer-term rates higher. The Fed is likely to continue the purchase program, however, until they see more sustained improvement in the economy. Considering these impacts to Metro, sales tax receipts, while increasing, still lag the budget. Also, recent increases in mid to longer term yields make refunding slightly less attractive. Looking at our fare revenue, while ahead of prior year receipts, is up less than would be expected given the fare increase effective July 2010. Our sales tax receipts are moving in the right direction, but remain roughly 17% below the previous high in the quarter ended December 2006.
Since our last update, we funded $50 million from Measure R bond proceeds for the acquisition of the rail maintenance yard for Expo 2. A September motion directed that we identify lessons learned from the financial crisis as they apply to Metro's debt policy. APTA has agreed to conduct a peer review in the first half of 2011 to meet that objective. And since the financial crisis in 2008, liquidity facilities, essentially letters of credit and similar products, are more expensive and somewhat less available. We have a number of these facilities that need to be replaced over about a three-year cycle. This coming September, $260 million of facilities supporting our Prop A 2008 bonds will expire. To reduce our need for facilities, we are, in general, investigating alternative products that we may recommend to replace a portion of the facilities as they expire. Products we're looking at would be periodically remarketed, but would not require liquidity. At a later meeting, we'll bring our recommendations for replacement liquidity banks and possibly for underwriters to provide the alternative products. For our refunding, higher interest rates have eroded some of the savings, but we're completing a tax analysis in preparation to refund a portion of our Prop A 2001 bonds and $89 million of commercial paper, and we'll bring an authorization request to the board in the spring. In further response to the September motion regarding the debt policy, over the next several months, we'll begin our outreach to potential financial advisors, including small and local firms. Next, we'll work with APTA to implement the peer review related to the debt policy and lessons learned. Then we'll issue RFPs to solicit replacement liquidity facilities and possibly to select underwriters to implement any of the alternative products. And finally, we'll develop the bond documents to request authorization to refund the Prop A 2001 bonds and commercial paper. And that concludes our presentation.
Item two is the annual update to the investment policy. The changes which are shown on the fourth page of the board report are primarily editorial, just conforming some words to match the current state code.
To adopt? Okay, where we are? Are we getting more of a report, or?
That's about all of it's here. Any questions? I'd be happy to address them.
Move to adopt.
No objections, sir. I have a potential concept of item three.
It is cold.
So I will move to the vice chair. Be the vice chair.
We can't vote without
two vices.
Yeah.
Am I in place of two?
No. You can
be. You need three votes, though. I don't think there are enough votes. Item number four is a request to approve the sale of property, specifically the shared equity interest in David Solo's home residence. Some of the longtime board members may recall the shared equity program, which was a relocation assistance program done back in the early 1990s. This is the last of six such agreements to come to fruition. If we agree to the sale, it will yield about $141,000 for us.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. I can get as Republican as any Republican in this room. I'm telling you right now that, read it. He violated the agreement. Mr. Solow has presented, prior to obtaining written approval, he did not, in excess of 10,000, he did not receive approval. The value, so in fact, although such private written approvals were not obtained, he violated the agreement. That house is worth $550,000? You're out of your minds. That house is worth about $1 million. He gives you $140,000 and he sells it for $1 million. And the reason he lost his darn job is because he was responsible for the gigantic accident. And now we're going to take $141,000 for our interest in the house, claiming it was $550,000 after he lied to us and told us that he had not made, he gave no evidence that he had made any home improvements in excess of $10,000, and now you accept his word for it. Why? Because he's a white man? Because he's Jewish?
The question, this was approved by the MTA when he originally bought this?
LACTC.
LACTC?
Yes. He was with LACTC at the time. Yes.
Make sure that we're correct here. I think Metrolink was spun off.
That's correct.
Part of the CTC became part of the MTA and at one point spun off to a separate organization.
So he was Metrolink division of LACTC.
Yes, we... Yes, he was transferred.
And at that time...
We provided $100,000 out...
Question is, what was the amount that the LACTC provided for the purchase of that home?
$100,000 out of the $326,000 purchase price.
Over 30%.
Correct.
We provided. And now the home is worth what?
$550,000 based on our staff appraisal. Our real estate department have contracted with a licensed appraiser for said event appraisal.
So we got an appraised value that the home is worth $500,000+.
Yes.
It hasn't appreciated that much over that time frame?
$200,000+, yes. Two-thirds appreciation, some of which... It may be due to his capital improvements.
And the capital improvements were solely provided by Mr. Solow?
Yes.
So MTA or Metrolink didn't pay for any of those improvements?
Correct.
But would not those improvements increase the valuation of the home, and would not the property thereby have a higher value?
Yes.
And that value is 500 and some thousand?
Yes.
What's the size of the house?
I don't have that with me today. I can certainly provide it. It's about 2,500 square feet is my recollection.
Okay.
Laguna Niguel? Laguna Niguel.
Laguna Niguel? You're going to buy a home? 500 and some thousand dollars?
That's what the appraiser said, yes.
I think we ought to have another appraisal. I mean, you're not talking about one of the low... Laguna Niguel, that's a little fishy.
A little fishy. Let me ask some questions, because I don't know about this. I wasn't here when all this happened. So
we bought him a house, we paid a third of it, and then the Metrolink was spun off, but we continued to have this one-third interest, right?
Yes.
So when this process of improvements occurred, when did that occur?
Prior to spin-off, most of the improvements were in the 94 time frame.
In the 94 time frame?
Yeah, 1994, and the spin-off occurred in 1996.
What were the improvements?
Some room additions.
He added a room?
Yes, room additions. Some white, you know, I believe that he took out some walls to open some space, combining the living room den area into a larger area, did some front hardscape.
And?
Those are the large items that I recall.
Well, that's pretty large. $90,000 worth of improvement to a house that was worth $326,000 is a lot of money. So
they were done in one, two...
Not like a couple of kids.
Four different efforts.
Four different what?
Four different times.
And he never sought approval for any of these?
As indicated, he showed me where he had copies of his request for approval.
Copy of from who?
From him to the...
What, he was a letter he sent to himself or to the department?
To our department.
Do we have a copy of it?
No, we don't.
Well, then how would we know we really got it?
I don't. It appeared...
Why are you buying it?
It appears to me that he made a good faith effort.
Well, but come on, we have to have some files. I mean, we don't open our mail or something. I mean, somebody gets a letter and it says, here, I'm asking, requesting this, it must go to somebody.
Yes, the staff to whom it was directed are no longer with the organization.
Where was it directed to? The real estate?
No, it was directed to Mr. Dick Dominguez, who was the then treasurer.
It was direct. Okay, so in the treasurer's records, do they find any of these letters? Because you said they were improvements at different times.
No, there was only one.
There was one?
Yes, there was only one request in Mr. Solo's files. We found none in the Treasury files. We did not find in the Treasury file, we did not find a copy of his letter. He has a copy of the letter that he...
I'm lost. Let's start again. Real quick. You said they were improvements over a certain period of time. I asked you, did he make a formal request? And he said yes on all of these improvements.
No, only one did I see.
Okay,
evidence.
The one that he did was for what?
He requested approval for about $10,000 for various... he was redoing windows and, I believe, some front room treatments.
And was that approved?
I see no evidence that it was approved.
Okay. But that letter, even that letter, you didn't find?
Not in our corporate files, no.
I mean, if you were to get a letter, the treasurer's office were to get a letter like this, I mean, it has to go somewhere other than in the round file, as they say. They would have put it in a file or something.
Mr. Solo was a member of the staff at the time, and I believe he walked this over to the then treasurer. So,
all right. So then, the other improvements he never even sought authorization.
Correct.
Why are we accepting it if he violated the process of the agreement?
We think that he made a good faith effort. He was not responded to.
What good faith effort?
One good faith effort to get approval.
Oh, come on, folks. Listen, you know, this is an old boys club, as they say, I guess, because you guys are just protecting. Anybody else who would have made an effort like this, I mean, this is not one time. You said over a series, this doesn't make sense. All right, so let's say you're validating his $90,000 worth of improvements. All right?
I haven't done that yet.
Oh, I thought you did validate them. Because somebody says it cost me 90 grand. How do you know it really cost him 90 grand?
I agree. The request here is to consider them, and if if it's okay to consider them, we will evaluate them.
Oh, but how do we know if they're okay? You don't have any, you know, I'm a board member. I just come here once a month and you put stuff in front of me. I mean, I'm asking really legitimate questions. You're asking me for authority of something you don't know anything about. This man came to you and says, I want to change the contractual arrangement here. And it's based on the fact that I made $90,000 worth of improvement. You don't have anything that demonstrates that he honored his side of the contract was. Before you make any improvement over 10 grand, you must get approval. He didn't get approval of any of them.
True.
Why are you asking me to give you authority to validate something that he never had any approval for? Art, this is not a hard question.
Why wouldn't he have the letter that he submitted for approval with the response that he received in one file?
He did not. He did.
Logical. If he's going to retain these records for over 16 years, would not also retain the okay with that same letter?
He would have, but he did not get an okay. He acknowledges that he did not receive a
response. The rule.
He did not receive a response to his request.
Rule, right?
There's some, if you believe his copy, it's a question of who didn't act. He didn't receive a response from Mr. Dominguez.
I don't understand. What do you mean didn't receive a response? First of all, we don't know. He's proving to us that he sent the letter. We don't have anything that acknowledges that we ever received such a letter. Second of all, you're telling me it's only for $10,000. And then now you're turning around and telling that we don't have any proof that anything was received back or not. He acknowledges that nothing was received, but he went ahead and made the improvements anyway, and then proceeded to make an additional 80 grand worth of improvements without any authorization whatsoever, that I think is fairly clear in the contract.
Yeah.
Why would we say, oh, it's okay, because why, he's a good guy, or because he tried? He didn't even try after the first 10 grand.
He did tell me, and that's all he did, is tell me that he had submitted in good faith a request for approval, never received a response, followed up in person on a couple of occasions and still did not receive a response, so he went ahead. Yes, he did so without...
With all due respect, I mean, this is not, you know, this is somebody who was in a commanding leadership role. Could have picked up the phone and called up the new CEO of MTA and say, look, I got a problem. I really want to move forward on these $10,000 worth of repair, but I want to honor this contract, so are you guys going to give me an answer or not? You can't just turn around and change the premise of the contract, can you, Mr. Lawyer?
I haven't seen the agreement, but if it says he needed to get prior approval before making the improvements, that's what he should have done.
Exactly. Okay, so let's say... So, we don't know. He could just say, I added a room, I did this, I did that, and it cost me 90 grand. We don't know. I don't understand why you're asking me to do something that doesn't even make some basic sense. Now, the other part of it is, then you went ahead and after that, then you go ahead and you now... It says... You analyze or you appraise the house, right?
Yeah.
So you went in there and you appraised it and he told you what the 90 grand were of improvements?
I believe that he told the appraiser, yes.
I'm sorry?
He told the appraiser which areas of the house were affected by his improvements.
And did we have that appraiser's report?
We have an appraiser's report, yes.
Do you have it?
Upstairs, yes.
The reason is that, you know, sometimes people make improvements, but they're not that kind of improvements that help anything. For example, you know, you might want to put mirrors on every single wall in your living room. And some people don't like mirrors on every wall in their living room. Or you might want to put paneling in the dining room, and somebody might not like that. So I don't know that sometimes somebody's improvement isn't somebody else's, like, I don't want to buy the house because it has paneling all over the house. And they said, you know, somebody thought, oh, that's a great improvement. But it's a matter of choice. So I don't know that it's necessarily an improvement to the upgrade of the house. So he validated those improvements?
The appraiser noted that work had been done, yeah. He did not comment on the value of those.
Work, the adding of the room?
Mr. Solo indicated that he has receipts for the work, including his contractor, which I've declined to see until I get direction from this board to whether I can consider it, because it has been, as the director points out, a bias.
Statute of limitations had run out, so we couldn't consider it. Right?
The agreement is still in full force.
Mr. Lay, or Ms. DuBois, and then Mr. Lay.
Just real quickly, at one time my husband was an appraiser, and I would suggest that typically when real estate appraisals are done, and he was not in real estate, he was in manufacturing, if you will, that you simply drive through the neighborhood and take comps. I would be very surprised if any appraiser went up, knocked on the door, and said, let me see what you've done. And I'm not chastising any of our appraisers. I'm just telling you that that's the way it's done in the real estate market and others. They're comps. They're not knock on the door and let me see what's happened.
In this specific case, we did request that the appraiser do a walkthrough with Mr. Solo, so that Mr. Solo could point out to the appraiser the work that was done, as well as allow the appraiser to see how it may or may not have varied from the original building.
Well, thank you for being so thorough.
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, I think I'd suggest that you refer this back to staff. A number of issues and questions have been posed, which I think are important. I think we need to provide more thorough information and more thorough review of the documents that such as may exist before proceeding. That would be my request of the committee at this time, if you agree.
Okay. Motion second, referring back for additional information. Without objection, so ordered.
And if you could get us the address, I'd like to Google it.
You give us also the address. I just commenting, you could go on the internet, and they give you a comp. It's not necessarily accurate, but it's within that ballpark of those homes. Thank you. Okay, item number five.
Item number five relates to our CNG program, and it requests authorization to add two new tools to our hedging toolbox. One are commodity options, and the other is, I believe we call it a reserve. In and of themselves, these do not have a budgetary impact. They're additional tools which staff will evaluate the use of in the upcoming FY12 budget year and try to match the appropriate tools to what we believe the CNG future holds for us in FY12.
How does this take care of the risk problem that we have? Because previously when you locked in a price, you locked it in twice the market rate.
When we locked in a price, we achieved certainty. We knew what it was, and it was locked in, and that's what it was going to be, no matter what the actual price was. The two new tools will allow us to participate in some downward movements, which the market has been reasonably steady and downward trending since Katrina in 2007.
So this is an improvement on the previous formula that we had.
Right. It will allow us to participate in downside movements if we do both a ceiling and a floor. We can limit our exposure to the range within that.
Which we did not have the ability to do in the previous contract.
Correct.
Are there other contracts that we have where we ought to be applying this same type of formula?
We do not presently hedge electricity or gasoline.
How about other commodities that we would purchase?
Those are perhaps CNG is about $50 million, electric power is about $15 million, gasoline is about $2 million, and then commodities below that probably don't justify hedging.
Supplies that we may have to cover for our operation.
Actual supplies are bid out and we get fixed prices for those. So.
Fixed. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, motion. Melina, second without objection. So ordered. Item number six.
Item six are three actions with regards to the Foothill extension. Recommendation A is really a larger policy issue as it pertains to all of the Measure R 35% transit capital projects. Those are the 12 transit projects and other projects that are listed in Attachment A to the ordinance. We will be establishing the policy that the interest costs of any borrowings or finance costs, whatever they are, will be charged to line 17 on the Attachment A. Not charging interest costs to a specific project is consistent with how we have handled interest costs as it relates to borrowings of Prop A and Prop C as we have built the Blue Line, Red Line, Green Line, and all other prior rail projects.
We have two public speakers, no comments. First, Dr. Williams and then Mr. Walsh.
Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno, Northeast LA. Finance costs are not going to be charged to the project? This sounds strange. So at least in most other projects that I'm familiar with, you always include finance costs. Example, the California Water Project that was to go on the November ballot had approximately $11 billion finance cost to it. Total face value was $11 billion, but as a bond issue, the interest and principal interest and costs were $11 billion. So it can be a significant amount. So taking finance costs off of a project seems strange. Thank you.
Supervisor Antonovich, you don't have to call me Mr. I remember when you ran for senator. Didn't you run for senator? He's not here, but in fact, I think he did. And in fact, I'd like to point out here that the ridership on the Pasadena line has been significantly below, not greatly, but significantly below expectations of MTA. But it was built the right way. It was not built corrupt under the because Ms. Molina and Mr. Antonovich made it non-corrupt. You did it the honest way. And when Ms. Molina built her extension, the ridership was terrible on East Side. But it was built right, and despite Yaroslavsky, safety improvements have been put on, and it's been fairly safe. Now let's take a look at what's happening at the Expo line. Well, Ms. Molina and Mr. Antonovich, you're not under FBI investigation on the construction at the Expo Authority. And as you know, thanks to my screaming and yelling at the LA Times, they did the story. And believe me, they're under FBI investigation. Mark Ridley Thomas
Questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I
have a question. I'm concerned about some of our second generation, if you will, or second decade projects. And I wonder if there's any way to take a portion of the capital contingency and put it in an escrow account to protect it from being, from it seeping away as we sit and watch and cry. So would that be a possibility?
I'm sure that the board can.
No, not unless somebody presents it. So
I might add that Attachment A on Measure R ordinance only speaks to Measure R funds. many of the transit projects also involve a combination of other funds, being perhaps Proposition A and Proposition C bonds as well. And the long-range plan is really, you know, the Measure R Attachment A is a subset of the long-range plan.
But the capital project contingency line item, does that not refer to any and all projects?
Any and all Measure R funded
projects. Any and all Measure R funded projects. Okay, so is there a possibility that a portion could be removed from that and put into an escrow account as a protection?
These are all future funds, yes, indeed. It would have an effect on long-range plan, however.
Okay, and
be a long-range plan action that would
okay.
do that.
And at some point in time, we will likely have to adjust the anticipated income from Measure R, correct?
As well as all other sales taxes.
I talked to Mr. Leahy today, and he very kindly said yes, and we'll also have to take down the expenses because they're less than we anticipated. But if we could do something about an escrow account, that would make me feel happier. So if you could present that as maybe a suggestion when it goes to the board, that might be a good thing. I don't know.
Certainly look that over as you note. It is time for us to address the long-term forecast
right.
for all of the funding sources as well as costs.
Right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, motion to approve, second without objection. So
wait,
ordered.
Wait, wait. I'm voting against this. I'm voting against this.
Okay. So it's Melina voting no.
So does it pass here?
Need a full board then with no recommendation?
No, you can say the committee voted against it. It didn't pass. What happens when it doesn't pass in committee?
Goes to the full board.
Is that what happens?
Well, not if you all.
I see.
Yeah. A 2-1 vote is no action. This is one majority.
Okay.
So a 0-3 would then kill it in committee and not send it to a full board, or
right, typically.
So you can reserve those comments for another, week or 2 weeks? Okay, any other public comment? Motion to adjourn? Oh, wait. Okay, Dr. Williams and Mr. Walsh.
Dr. Clyde Williams from El Sereno. Not part of a tag team, though. Money. I always tell people, follow the money. The problem is finding the trail, finding the tracks. One of the elements is all of the Measure R projects. There's escalated costs, there's non-escalated costs. One of the elements would be have a summary of all of the Measure R projects that are going to be coming up and have it clearly available as to the current status, and you have a PMIS system, supposedly, and should be able to locate what are the costs, what are the escalation factors, so that we can all be on the same page. If everybody's on the same page, then we have a good foundation. With costs going every possible direction, and interest rates being every possible direction, and what's the employment going to be, we need to have at least some framework that we can depend upon. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh?
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. 1 million requests, server requests last year. I'll bring in the analytics tomorrow. Let's take a look at your first quarter financial performance. Passenger fare was 1% higher than budget. Where is the gigantic loss, $140 million shortfall in your federal grant and state sources? 39% from federal grant, below expectations, 68% below expectations for state. So what's the answer? Scale back construction? No. Cut the service. That's all you do is cut the service. I'm telling you right now. And you did a good job on David Solo. I mean, I think that the DA should be looking into that. Because apparently they don't have computers over here, so they can't Google the neighborhood. I'm telling you right now that this agency is under FBI investigation. You're clear here.
Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to note for you that last week we retired the last diesel bus following a 20-year of investment by MTA and the Federal Transit Administration. We now have 2,221 CNG buses, largest CNG fleet. I think we're the largest all CNG fleet in the world. I wanted to also let you know that I've been in dialogue with the Federal Transit Administration, Peter Rogoff, the administrator, regarding the rail car purchase. It comes to the board next week for enhanced direction. I think we may, before that board meeting, get some clear indication for the first time from the FTA as to what they will and won't approve in terms of our rail car procurement, and by extension, by the way, the bus procurement that comes before the board in February. So with that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Mr. Walsh. Okay. Item 7.
Thank you. Frank Shapiro, Director of Budget. The summary of first quarter financial performance for Metro, that as basically sales taxes and fares were on or about on budget. The state and federal revenue was below budget because most of those revenue sources are reimbursable, and because we didn't incur the expense, we weren't reimbursed. In terms of expenses, our operating expenses, including labor, were below budget, and those are detailed in Attachment A of the report. Our capital expenses were also significantly below budget for the first quarter, although we expect to be closer to budget by the end of the year. And again, most of our capital projects for the first 3 months of the year were below budget. And our other expenses and subsidies were also below budget. Basically, virtually every expense category was below budget. Attachment C is detailing the Measure R projects, which with one or two exceptions were below budget in the first quarter. In terms of a forecast for the remainder of the year, we expect to basically be on budget for sales taxes and fare revenue, and depending on how rapidly we could gear up to spend money that's reimbursable from the state and the federal government, those expenses will be closer to being on budget. And we're hoping that our capital projects and planning projects will be closer to being on budget by the end of the year. With that, I conclude my report.
Thank you. Motion to adjourn without objection, so ordered.
Pricing Committee, Madam.
Here.
Here.
Proceed with the items as they are printed, presented before us, and that would mean we will address item number 1.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. The first item has 3 actions for your consideration related to the El Monte Station project. Tim Lindholm, our Director of Capital Projects and Project Manager for this project, will give the report.
Good afternoon. Michelle, could you turn on the... Thank you. This item is in relation to the El Monte Station project, which is funded as part of the Federal Congestion Reduction Demonstration Program. What staff is asking for today is for contract modification authority in a not-to-exceed amount of $6 million so that we can remove and dispose of significant quantities of unforeseen soil contamination that has been identified under the project site. I put a picture of the site up on the screen so you can see what the project looks like. But in terms of background, the new station is a two-level station, one underground, one above ground, built on about a five-acre site. And to construct the second underground level, we need to dig down to a depth of about 20 feet. That's about 120,000 cubic yards of soil. In June of 2009, as part of the preliminary engineering for this project, we drilled 10 soil borings to identify the geotechnical and environmental characteristics of the soil beneath the site. The results of that investigation indicated that there would be shallow and localized areas of soil contamination. And as a result of that, we elected to leave that outside of the construction contract, and we would deal with that with Metro consultants in concert with the contractor once we started digging out there. Construction of the project began in October of 2010. One of the first work tasks we did was to excavate the north roadway, demolish the old station, and relocate a gas line. And as we were doing that work, we observed soil contamination right off the bat. As soon as we found that, we mobilized our troops to drill 32 soil borings all across the site, continuously cored. We took 180 soil samples. And we did that so that we could profile all the dirt in ground so we could tell exactly where all this dirt needed to go before we disturbed it. In December of 2010, we received the results of that investigation, and it's now apparent that there are far greater quantities of soil contamination than we had envisioned. In a nutshell, 5% of the soil is going to be classified as hazardous soil because it has lead impacts. That needs to go to a facility called Mecca out near the Salton Sea. 15% of the soils have high levels of petroleum hydrocarbons. That is planned to go to a landfill called Chiquita Canyon up near Magic Mountain. 80% of the soils have very low concentrations or trace concentrations of petroleum hydrocarbons. And we are working with two landfills there, with Puente Hills and with Olinda in Orange County. And I'd like to just take a moment to thank Supervisor Molina's staff with that. They've helped us a great deal with Puente Hills in relaxing some of the requirements and keeping the gates open, and that's going to lead to upwards of $500,000 in savings on this soil removal. So staff and the contractor have worked together to identify the most cost-effective and schedule-efficient means to deal with this contaminated soil. And due to the extensive field coordination that's going to be required to excavate all the soil and build the station at the same time, we feel that the most cost-effective way to deal with this is through a contract modification with the contractor. Metro will manage all the work, make sure all the trucks are monitored, that we look at all the tickets and make sure that every load of soil is going to the right place in a legal manner and in the most cost-effective manner. In terms of cost, the board report asks for a not-to-exceed amount of $6 million. That is a worst-case scenario. It's already going down. It's now just a little bit north of $5 million. We hope to bring that number further down. We have another meeting with Puente Hills tomorrow morning to see if we can work out a deal there and keep the price down. In regards to budget for the entire project, you may recall that the board set a life-of-project budget for this project of $60 million about a year and a half back. That budget was to do two projects, to do El Monte Station and the Petsoras Plaza, a new station that connects Petsoras Plaza to the busway. Now with El Monte Station in full construction mode and the Petsoras Plaza project with preliminary engineering complete and undergoing the final Caltrans approvals, it's now apparent that we will not be able to finish both projects within the original budget. Another thing the board should be aware of is that the land that is contaminated out there is for the most part owned by Caltrans. About 10% of the land is owned by Metro out there. That happens to be the land that is not really contaminated. We have sent a letter to Caltrans informing them that we do intend to seek cost recovery, and we're going to have discussions with them sooner than later. In regards to path forward, staff is asking for this contract modification authority so we can quickly deal with the soil contamination and mitigate against any delays. When the soil removal is complete, which I anticipate to be in March, value engineering is complete on El Monte, and we go out on the street with Petsoras and find out what the final bid price is, then we'll return back to the board with a revised budget ask if we need to. Until that time, no physical work other than entitlement and design will be done on Petsoras. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Are there any questions for staff on the matter? Unanticipated amendment is being sought pursuant to
the item.
It's been properly moved. We take note of the fact that there's a request to be entertained by way of public comment. Mr. Walsh, if you would take advantage of the opportunity.
$6 million cost overrun. And you said you knew it wasn't there, but you bid the contract without the soil remediation. So it would look lower, so the federal government would give you the money. I'm telling you, the biggest boondoggle in the history of MTA, far beyond this sinkhole, is the ad hoc congestion pricing committee. And who is going to take the toxics? The Hispanics. You're going to dump it in Puente Hills, and you heard what staff said. They thanked Miss Molina for easing the rules so you could, and this is known as racial toxology. You're going to dump it in the, you wouldn't dump it in my Jewish neighborhood, but it's fine for the Mexican politicians to dump it in the Mexican neighborhood. Let me know when my 60 seconds are up.
They just did it just did expire. That closes the public comment on the item. It's been properly moved. Any further discussion? That would be the order without exception.
Thank you.
I'm willing to second it.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you said to move forward without it.
Order without objection is what I was attempting to say. All right. Thank you very much. Let's move to item number two.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Item two is to authorize the CEO to exercise options one and two to the contract for the Hot Lanes project with Atkinson Contractors firm. This one, if you'll recall, we had come to the committee and to the board and asked for permission for the CEO to be able to award the contract itself as we moved forward in order to keep the project moving. We have done so with that. We didn't ask for permission to move the various options forward. The one option in particular that's not before you today, the third option, we definitely want to make sure that we're back and discussing with the board should we decide to exercise that option. That would be the option to go beyond just a demo period into full operation of the system if the demonstration proves to be successful. These two options are relatively straightforward and simple, and I'll ask Stephanie to go into a brief discussion on these options.
Sure. Option one, priced at $1.5 million, is actually a safety enhancement for express lane users traveling in the 110 express lanes. This will enable us to allow those motorists to continue on to the 105 through the HOV director connector ramps without forcing them to weave into general purpose lane traffic. The second option at $2.7 million actually relates to a federal regulation that requires additional signage at all of our access points on the express lanes. The new regulation was issued last year with the support of Caltrans District 7 and headquarters. We have been working actively to get that regulation waived. Unfortunately, last month, the Federal Highways did make a determination that that requirement would not be waived. Because we identified both of these activities as options in the request for proposal, we were able to competitively receive a bid as well as evaluate the feasibility of the proposal and maintain the 16.2% DBE goal requirement. These options were anticipated in the budget authority increase requested and approved last month, and as such, exercising these options does not require an increase of funding in the LIFA project budget. And that completes my report.
Are there any questions or comments from staff on the matter, members of the committee? Let's hear from Dr. Clyde Williams, sir.
Dr. Clyde Williams, 4115 Barrett Road, El Sereno, Northeast LA. The 105, is it going to be an HOT lane also? Because you're going to put HOT drivers onto the 105 for safety reasons, of course. How soon do they have to get off before they'll be charged, or will they be charged? If they are charged, isn't that an HOT lane then? HOT on the 105, I don't think it's gone through the environmental clearances. So that's one thing. The other one is, An increase in $4 to $6 million won't increase the life of project costs? That seems strange. Who's going to pay for it? Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I can come up on a couple of items that were raised. This item, what the transition for these single-occupant vehicles that have paid to be in the 110 hotline so that they can use the direct HOV connector to transition to the 105 was cleared environmentally. It was a part of the document that we looked at for this specific project. The 105 itself is not a part of our hotline project, nor are we proposing that it be at this time. The board may wish us to direct us to look at that later, but it's not in this proposal. The single occupant vehicles, once they make the transition to the 105, will have to exit at the first available exit, legal exit from the HOV lanes into the mixed flow lanes, and that was what the procedure and process will be. It really prevents, it helps make the area safer, because otherwise those vehicles would have to exit on the 110, transition across all the mixed flow lanes, take the 105 connector, and then move into the 105, transition to the 105, so this should be safer for the public overall.
All right, thank you very much for that clarification or amplification on the item. I think that suffices the committee's concern. It's been properly moved. There's a second?
Second.
Seconded. That will be without objection. Thank you very much. Let's move to item number three, a receiving file.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Item three is the usual status report we're giving on the entire demonstration program. The series of projects, we've made a few modifications to hopefully make the report a lot clearer, easier to understand, and I'll ask that Stephanie Wiggins go through that with you quickly.
Sure. We've tried to amplify what the status of the budget and the schedules are for each of the project elements of the Express Lanes program. Also, I wanted to report again that last week we issued a notice to proceed to our DBOM contractor. I also wanted to just provide a status to the committee as a reminder. At our last committee meeting held in November, we identified and the committee authorized us pursuing a value pricing grant application opportunity if one so developed. A couple of weeks ago, we notified the board through a board box that we were planning to submit an application. We are planning to submit an application that really funds a study at a level of, and then asked for $4 million. This is a joint submittal with SCAG, as well as has support from Riverside County Transportation Commission and Orange County Transportation Commission. And we'll be looking at a study that helps facilitate coordination among all of the various county partners regarding their hot lane networks and the impact to the customer. And it also allows studying of cordon pricing. So I just wanted to remind the committee about that application process and how it relates to our last committee item back in November. And that completes my report.
We're available for questions, Mr. Chair.
Right. Prior to that, we'll hear from Dr. Clyde Williams and Mr. John Walsh.
Supervisor Ridley Thomas, you don't have to use the honorific, Mr. You know, I remember when we go back to when you were first running for city council and when you came to the bus riders dinner when I was a long time ago. And look, this is the way the game is played. I come up here and bring corruption, the inspector general, and sooner or later, and the expo line, sooner or later, the LA Times, and you say nothing, sooner or later, the LA Times picks it up. Isn't that? Now that I have 1 million server requests on my website, they're paying a lot more attention to me over there. I can get editors. I mean, the ad hoc, this toll lanes, way over budget, millions and millions of dollars, it's in chaos. And I'm telling you, Obama eventually will pull the plug on this. You're not going to get away with this. And remember, it's always set up so that the black man is the fall guy. They're setting you up. And I'm telling you, as a white man, they're setting you up.
That closes the public comment portion on this item. Members of the committee, are there remarks you wish to direct to the staff?
You know, I just want to say I appreciate staff's efforts in bringing this report forward. I think the information is more clear. I also think that, you know, it seems that we're making some progress with the federal government as well in terms of any amendments that need to be made. The partnership seems to be strong. I think there are a lot of things, you can look at Major Arias, look at a lot of the other things that we're doing, but I am extremely excited about this project. I think it's going to touch a lot of people in a beneficial way and reduce the commuting times who otherwise do not use our rail system, Metrolink, or our bus system. So I think this has huge upside, and I think when we look at funding in this state and available resources at the federal level, this is not the only solution, but it's definitely a viable solution we need to move forward. So I'm glad that we're in the forefront of this, and glad the pilots are moving forward. There are a lot of challenges. I mean, we've seen that today. And you can't see below the surface sometimes you use run into things you don't expect. But I think we are moving this project forward. I look forward to seeing up the ground rate.
Good. May I suggest the following? The thrust of the report that we just heard is an attempt to give greater clarity, a heightened level of transparency with respect to the project itself. And I think in the final analysis, we'll find that there's justification for those things that have been requested. They will be appropriately vetted and discernible by all those who would wish to take a closer look. More than one format for public consumption. The documents that conform to state and federal requirements, as well as those that are routinely submitted to the board itself. And then I think the interactive dimensions of whatever would be posted on the website would be equally helpful for the purposes of the public being able to keep informed as to the progress of the project. So we thank the staff for that. Dr. Williams, we did call you before. We're about to close the public comment portion on this item. I'm prepared to acknowledge your desire to be heard if that is still the case. Pass the play, sir. Thank you so much. That concludes that item. Is there a motion to receive and file the item?
So moved.
It's been properly moved. Is there a second? Without objection, that will be the order. Let's move.
Mr. Chair, pleased to announce that last week we retired our last diesel bus. We also disabled the engine so it can't be used by a private firm under hire in the future. This leaves us with 2,220 CNG buses. The federal government was a big partner over a 20-year period in buying all these buses, providing about 80% of the funding. I've had some constructive dialogue with the FTA today and yesterday as regards our rail car procurement and, by extension, the bus procurement, which will be discussed with the board in February or March. I am hopeful. I'm hopeful for the first time that by the board meeting we'll have some insights into how the feds may look at our unconventional approach designed to create local jobs in LA. So I think we're going to get some clarity as to the path ahead, and we'll share that with the board in the next day or two. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your report. And I would just simply say that the issue of local jobs is obviously very important. Each member of the board has made that abundantly clear, and all that we do should seek to maximize that particular goal and or objective. On this item, by way of public comment, we'll hear from Dr. Clyde Williams and Mr. John Walsh. In that order, please, sir.
General comment.
Public comment.
Public comment.
Okay. Dr. Clyde Williams, El Sereno, for the public comment. The basic element that I have is why the 710 tunnel might have trucks on it. Because one of the observations that we've made is that there are no projects proposed north of the 5 on the 710. Thereby, all of those roads apparently have capacity. Adequate, doesn't need to be improved. So we've become suspicious as to why trucks on the 710 North Extension Tunnel. We're concerned that perhaps in the background there's the HOT lanes,